This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts on what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Our program takes a holistic approach in addressing anti-aging psychology, medicine, alternative medicine, fitness, nutrition, and wellness. Our emphasis is on innovative thinking and practices that have solid data and results. Are you sometimes baffled by so many schools of thought with contradictory advice about health? Today's guest expert, Dr. Richard G. Petty, has traveled the world, meeting with top researchers and gurus to sort out what works and to develop an integrated approach to health. Dr. Petty received his medical training in England and since then has obtained 3 PhDs. He put his knowledge and wisdom together in his book, Healing, Meaning, and Purpose. He also is a popular speaker who has lectured in 44 countries. In the first part of today's show, we'll look at how Dr. Petty views health and dealing with health challenges. In the second part, we'll look at what he has found to be the most exciting cutting-edge developments in health. Dr. Petty, is the title of your book, Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, meant to suggest that integrative health starts with purpose?
Absolutely. And you've actually just hit the nail on the head. We spent a long time trying to come up with a title, and somebody just said to me, sit down, what is the most important thing? And I said, number one, have a purpose in life. Find your purpose, because everyone has one. Number two is find meaning in your experiences. And number three, from that, health, healing, it all just flows down from there. And so it really is essential. And I'd like to just pick up on something you said there about some integrative approaches. One of the things that we've done, and you're right, I've been a globetrotter over the years, is to create integrated medicine, which is very, very slightly different, and it's a slightly different idea, but I wonder if I could just share a little bit of that, because I think it's going to kind of give a context for the rest of what we talk about. So may I say a little bit about that first?
Certainly. Go ahead.
Okay. The reason we came up with this term, and I had the privilege of spending several years, 8 years actually, working with Prince Charles on setting up a new system of healthcare, which we call integrated. The idea being not just to cobble together a few different modalities, but the fundamental idea is that health and wellness and, for that matter, longevity is really a function of integrating all the different parts of you, yourself, your mind, your spirit, your body, your relationships, all of it. And we know full well that if any one of those things is not functioning properly, then you start feeling lousy. And the way that I always look at this is that for me, symptoms are signals. So if you're in a dysfunctional relationship, if you have a physical problem, for me, those are signals that something somewhere is going wrong. And the integration hasn't worked. So that's the idea. And whenever we look at people, one of the cardinal ideas is that we look at them from 5 dimensions: physical, psychological, social, subtle, so for the subtle systems of the body, and spiritual. And you know, not everybody likes all 5, and that's fine. But I approach everything about health and wellness from those 5 perspectives, and it really does seem to work very well.
Mm-hmm. If I asked a dozen different gurus, how do you find your sense of purpose, I'd probably get a dozen different answers. How do you put that together and integrate it?
Okay, yes, you're absolutely right. You do always find a ton of different answers to just about everything. And what you also said at the beginning, I like very much. The whole field of health and wellness is so confused and confusing for everybody. So for me, purpose is number one. It's very much a personal thing. It's a matter of what your core constructs are, what really matters to you. And I always, always recommend to anybody, if they're going to do anything in life, just sit down and find out what really matters to you. And as far as you possibly can, live your life with those instead of just trying to do what other folks said. The other day, I was talking to somebody, and he is a very creative individual, and he wanted some advice on how to get more organized and time management and all this. And I said, Steve, wait a minute. You are very creative. Your purpose is actually to generate ideas, and you do this fantastically, and people pay you a king's ransom for doing that sort of thing. Why are you trying to teach your cat to quack? And he said, what? And I said, you're teaching your cat to quack. Your purpose in life is to be creative, and you bring that to everything you do. And to say that you now want to go in a different direction and organize yourself differently doesn't make much sense. So I think it's very individual, it's very personal, but everybody does have and can find a purpose in life. And some folk even say, you know, you have more than one. You have a higher purpose, you have a spiritual purpose. But I spend a lot of time always getting people to sit down and really look at what are the things that your hot button issues, what are the things that matter to you. And if you're not doing those things, chances are things will not go well for you. I was recently advising somebody who's a doctor, and he said, I never really wanted to be a doctor. And I said, why not? And he said, well, why are you doing it? He said, well, my parents pushed me into it. They're both doctors. They went to medical school. And I said, well, what do you really want to do? And he said, I want to play the trombone. And in fact, I said, well, why didn't you go and do that? And in fact, what eventually happened, he put his financial affairs in order, and he now plays music professionally. He's found his purpose. And I think it's always such a mistake, isn't it? Because you and I both know, and everybody listening, there's so many people who've lived their lives through somebody else's lens, actually done what other people have said, and it's very hard to do that, find satisfaction, and eventually what happens, the wheels come off, you start getting sick, something happens. So this is why I think it's very personal, and yes, you'll get 100 different answers for what is your purpose. It's individual. Find it for yourself. Don't rely on anybody else to tell you.
So sometimes the most brilliant things in life are just figuring out how to get it really simple. And for someone who's trying to find their purpose, it's just asking themselves what really matters to me. And that makes it purpose very similar to meaning.
Absolutely. And I really do believe that purpose and meaning are very closely interlinked. And if you just sit down briefly and look at the interrelationship of those and what really matters in your life, you will find very quickly that not only will you find your purpose, but everything you do starts to be imbued with more meaning. So I always say that try not to wait until your body, your relationship, something trips you up, because it's telling you, you know, it's time to look for the answers. Because most people go through certain phases of life when the big questions come up, and the who am I, what's the meaning of life, what should I be doing with my life. We normally get those at crisis time. What I suggest is look right now, today. Start looking at those things, and you will find very, very quickly, just asking very simple questions, that you can come up with the answer for yourself very rapidly. This does not need to be something which takes you half a lifetime. You can find it quickly, and I do a ton of very, very practical things to just find out where people are at, what their center of gravity is, and from that we can work out their purpose, and from that flows meaning.
So it's rather analogous to physical health. Be proactive when you're healthy rather than waiting for the symptoms to give you a wake-up call that you have to do something at a time when you're feeling pretty unresourceful to begin with.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, how many of us, though, don't start digging our well until we're thirsty? It's, it's such a terrible mistake. You know, there's a statistic that I think is really very sobering. Was published in the Archives of Internal Medicine a couple of years back, that only 3% of Americans are following the minimum healthy lifestyle. 3%. 97% are not. And that doesn't even take into consideration things like having meaning, having purpose, looking after your mental health. It's just the physical stuff. So about doing the minimum. Shocking, isn't it?
If we're not even looking at purpose, what is it that the 3% are doing right?
Well, when they look at statistics like that, the 3% just means that they're eating, exercising, and sleeping. And that pretty much is it. And we all know that a healthy life does not need to be complicated. One of the biggest issues that I run into all the time, and it took me, as you said, a lot of qualifications, a lot of experience to get this, that the answers are actually terribly, terribly simple. And you can do things quickly, and it doesn't need to be something that you have to change everything about life. You can do things quickly and easily, and that must be one of the take-home messages. Quick and easy is the answer.
You write about how if you have your purpose and meaning aligned, you're going to have far more energy. And again, if I asked our 12 gurus what energy is and what it means, I'd get 12 different answers. How do you translate or integrate all these theories?
Well, I agree with that wholeheartedly, that you will always get a ton of different answers. And interestingly, we've just put together a new program on how to boost your energy. And although you can look at it in many different ways, they actually, all roads lead to Rome, they all come down to the same kind of thing. There's obviously physical energy, and that's metabolism, blood flow, and all of those good things. There's also the relationship with oxygenation and breathing. Then, of course, there is psychological energy, how much you want to apply. And again, if you find your purpose, that's where your passion comes from, that's where your energy comes from. And we know successful people are the people invariably who don't do a lot of extra work, but when they're working, they focus all of their energy, all of their attention on one problem at a time, get rid of it, onto the next one. So there certainly is the psychological component of energy. I have, in recent years, have also become very persuaded that there is another form of energy, these subtle systems of the body, what in China they call qi, and a very similar idea in India of pran. In the West, the Greeks used to call this a spiritus, or rather the Romans and the Greeks called it the same thing, pneuma. And this idea that there is another form of energy in the body, I think there's more and more evidence for what we now call, I mean, the technical term is the biofield. But there really does seem to be something else. We can manipulate it with acupuncture. We can certainly build it with certain exercises that seem to do something more than just physical jerks, physical exercise, breathing. There's something else. It took me a long time to be persuaded of the existence of these subtle systems. Now I'm quite sure that they're there. And there's actually some fairly decent evidence beginning to emerge that they're there, and if those subtle systems aren't working properly, again, lack of energy, you just get drained extremely quickly. So for me, it's several separate pieces, but what's so intriguing, and why I say all roads lead to Rome ultimately, is that if you work on developing, say, we'll just use the example of doing some physical exercise, breathing exercise, and sleeping better, the Chinese would say, well, actually, you are building your qi, and so in addition to doing the physical stuff, and stuff that is easily measurable, you are also doing something else, which is extremely interesting. And I also think that one of the key things about energy is that there are so many very loose ways that people have talked about it. Years ago, we started having a working party in the UK on the whole idea of energy, energy healing, energy medicine, and so on. And one of the people who attended that, it was a small closed meeting, was Brian Josephson, a Nobel laureate and a good friend and nice guy. And he remonstrated with everybody and said, for heaven's sake, don't use this term energy so loosely. These are systems. And he said, they're fields. And you can't just have energy, you have to have a field as well. And that's why we call them subtle systems. So we get over this kind of rather loose talk about energy this and energy that.
So what I infer from what you said is, part of it is just do the things that you know you should do, exercise and breathing and stress reduction. and don't worry so much about the school, but when it comes to the subtle forms of energy in the systems, are there things that we need to know about that, or should we be studying, since most of us don't have much of an understanding of it?
Yes. Number one is, yes, the common sense things that we all know and love will build all of that. But there's a whole system of very simple exercises, primarily based in Qigong, which is a Chinese system, that anybody can learn very easily and guaranteed to boost energy. And very simple stuff that you can do. There are even some points on the body which you can just do a very simple little bit of 30-second massaging of in morning, evening, whenever you need it. And just by doing that, then doing a little bit of breathing, it's remarkable. I can show anybody how quickly you can boost energy. Just the other day, let's think of one of the most skeptical types of people that you could ever have. I had a representative from a pharmaceutical company, drug rep, salesperson. Very, very nice, but, you know, hard-nosed business person, scientist. And I said, she told me that she was pretty tired, and I said, okay, I've just done this program, I've just dictated all of this, so take your shoes and socks off for a moment, and this is what we're going to do. I showed her a couple of points, and again, I can share these exactly with the listeners, and she said, that's amazing. How did you do that? And I said, you did it. You just stimulated these couple of points, did a couple of breaths. And she said, I feel like I just woke up and I'm full of energy again. Very quick, easy things, but things that are very difficult to explain just on a biomechanical model of the body.
Is that something that you could talk us through now how to do, or?
Oh, absolutely I could, and we could do this as a little practice for anybody that's in a good spot right now where they can do this. One caveat.
In other words, you don't want somebody to do it while they're driving.
I prefer not, because if you do it while you're driving, it would not be a good idea. And number two, it would be a little bit difficult, because I'm going to make you touch your foot. And I'd really rather you didn't do that right now, because I like people and I don't want anybody to harm themselves. Very simple. I can show you this. And something that I can do for you as well, Mike, if it would be helpful, because I've just created a little schematic of this that I don't know if it's possible for you to do this, but you might actually want to put it up on your website so people could actually have a little look at that under the show, if that would be convenient.
I'd be happy to, yes.
I'll offer that to you and to your listeners. But it's very, very simple. One caveat, apart from don't do it while driving, is please don't do it if you're pregnant. Just above your ankle bone, the ankle that's on the inside, if you go up about 3 inches above your ankle, just a little spot there, right in the middle, and it's very forgiving. It doesn't matter if you don't find exactly the right place. And if you just put some gentle massage on there, just gentle pressure for about 30 seconds. That's number one. You do that for 30 seconds. Then, second, and it doesn't matter if you do this on the left or the right, it's quite all right. Second is right in the very, very middle of the sole of your foot. You just give that a little bit of a massage. And again, it doesn't need to be exactly the right place. You'll find it. And again, you do that for about 30 seconds. Then plant your feet on the floor, sit up, back straight, and all I'd like you to do with your feet flat on the floor is do 30 seconds of abdominal breathing. Deep, slow, done. 1.5 to 2 minutes. Try it. I'd like anybody, if they're in a good spot to do it, just try it. You'll be amazed and astonished, because just about everybody says, wow, how can that happen? And it's that simple. That points above your inner ankle, middle of the foot, and breathe. Very simple technique. And if anybody can explain to me on using normal physiological biochemical models how that works, please tell me. One of my doctorates is in biochemistry, and I cannot explain this, and I'm also a neurologist. I cannot explain it, but it works every time, so it's very remarkable. So there's a little free gift for you, and as I say, if it would be helpful to you, Mike, I'll email you a copy of the little picture that I made.
Great, thank you.
So that'll be a little gift for your listeners and for you, of course.
And thank you for taking us through the exercise. If we wanted to learn more about these systems and other exercises like this, what would be the best source?
In fact, what I've done is that my own website, which is richardgpettymd.com, you know, I should have called it something terribly creative like Dancing Dragons or something, but I'm not very creative, so I've used my name, Richard G for George, pettymd.com. I have, as a real labor of love, created lists of all kinds of places. It's one of the most comprehensive lists of where you can find out more about Qigong, homeopathy, flower essences. I've listed pretty much every integrated medicine program in the States that I know of, and many in Europe, as well as providing access to about 200 medical journals. So it's all there, and I just did it because I thought people would find it helpful. So my website's a pretty good place to start, simply because I took the time to check out every single one of my listings. When you and I first started talking, I had a very good look at your material, because you don't get on my list unless I've checked you. And, and you are going to be on my list. In fact, you're going to be very high on my list at the end of today, because I always check everything myself, and then I go back and recheck periodically just to make sure that people haven't sort of gone wild and woolly. So it's a good place to start, and it lists and has links to most of the major organizations that I've been able to check out, so you can find more information. I also have lists of books. I've put a load of lists of books and book reviews up on Amazon, and I then link to those through my website as well. So if you're interested in boosting your energy and that kind of thing, I provide little potted summaries of the books and so on. So it gives you a good place to start.
So it's probably the most carefully thought out list that's out there anywhere.
I hope so. And as I said, I just did it because so many people kept saying the same thing, which is, where on earth should somebody go to get reliable information? Because I was seeing person after person after person who had oftentimes spent vast sums of money on all kinds of tests and investigations and treatments, some of which made absolutely no sense at all. And I've always been somebody who's looked very, very hard at data. I've always been data-driven. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you may not yet know is that I had the privilege of, for many years, of serving on the Research Council for Complementary Medicine in the UK, and then actually chaired the whole organization. That's how I ended up working with Prince Charles. The whole idea was to just find out what's real and what isn't, because there's so much confusion. And once I discovered that there just was there was nothing out there. There was people were being misled all over the place, because most people, with the greatest respect, have never been taught how to read a research paper. I mean, why should they?
Mm-hmm.
And so people were just getting into such a mess. And I said, okay, I can read research papers. It's what I do for a living. I've trained thousands of healthcare providers around the world in how to do this. So I said, well, okay. So I rolled up my sleeves and started doing this. And it took a while, but people obviously find it's pretty useful. So I think, as far as I'm aware, it is one of the most comprehensive, carefully scrutinized lists available. And I also try to update with new stuff, because, you know, what you said in your introduction is absolutely right. There's not just confusion about medical things, but even in things like psychology. I talk a lot about the way that we are now in the fourth wave of personal development. We know we went through all these different phases of what I call psychobabble, and then it was different ideas. And now, finally, the whole personal development area is being data-driven. So your material is all about, well, what can you actually do? show me the stuff. And that's so important, isn't it?
Yes. Let me take a break here.
Sure.
This is America's anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricky, with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, one of those places for you to go to get the kind of information that Dr. Petty is talking about. Today's expert guest is integrative health physician, Dr. Richard G. Petty. His website is richardg.com. And his book that puts it all together is Healing, Meaning, and Purpose. information on anti-psychology or anti-aging psychology, and my free Defy Aging newsletter is at drbricky.com. That's drbricky.com. Or you can just go to notaging.com and it'll take you to drbricky.com. Dr. Petty, one of the things you have a lot of expertise on is resilience. Can you tell us what you mean by that?
Oh, yes. This is something that is very, very close to my own heart. Resilience is the ability to bounce back. And it is one of the things that we have had the most trouble with, because various things have been happening in society, and we as a people have been getting worse and worse and worse, to be honest, at being resilient, being able to bounce back. I think it was General Patton once said that I'm not interested how far somebody falls, I'm interested how far they bounce after they've fallen. And that really does summarize what resilience is all about, why we're so interested in it, because there are some very novel ways in which you can build your own resilience and feel much better very quickly. And it's, if I look at everything in the world, if I wished for one thing for everybody, it would be, let me teach you how to build resilience. The trouble that has happened in recent years is that because everything has been so very easy, you know, if in doubt, you can just take a pill. That's the solution for everything, and it's created real difficulties. People do not any longer have the kind of endurance that our ancestors had. And you know, it's not a matter of being tough, it's just a matter of knowing how you can put yourself back together again. There's some very, very good data recently that even things like how do people handle rejection? People that are very good at handling rejection, and heavens, we've all been rejected at some time in our lives, are the ones who are resilient. And it's very important in terms not just of your physical health, but also in terms of your longevity. There is evidence now growing that one of the things that determines how long we live for is our ability to deal with the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, to be able to bounce back when things hit us, which they inevitably will. It's part of life's rich tapestry, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you've been at the University of Pennsylvania and worked with Dr. Martin Seligman, who is the guru of learned optimism and authentic happiness. How do those relate to resilience?
Very much so, and in fact, the folk there, that was one of the reasons that when Marty started that work, it was driven not just by the ideas of let's all be happy and sing kumbaya. It was very much a matter of why is it that some kids and some adults have such problems, and is there something that we can do to build that? And the answer is absolutely it can. And when Marty started doing that work, and why it was so desperately important, was that nobody had really been looking at the positive side of life, had they? I mean, it was at the time it was just
like the medical model.
Yeah, well, yes, and it's remarkable that you know over all of those years that people really hadn't looked at it, and so you're right, it was just all about let's look at sickness. So resilience to me is the process of being able to adapt and thrive in the face of any kind of adversity or stress, trauma, tragedy, threat. Because when we think about it, our lives never go according to plan. The most important things in our lives are the things that come out of left field, unexpected. And they happen all the time. And if you can't handle those, you're going to have a real big problem. Now, resilience, as I said, the ability to bounce back, being able to adapt and thrive, that doesn't mean that we all have to sort of become unemotional creatures like Mr. Spock in Star Trek. It means that you just begin to take control of your life. And I have a few very simple steps that I recommend, and anybody can do these literally in a few minutes a day. And it's not something that you need to uproot your life, change everything. And there's some very simple things, and I wonder if we could perhaps talk about one or two.
I was going to ask if you didn't offer.
Well, number one that I always start stance on this, is self-regulation, the ability to be able to monitor your internal states, your moods, your emotions, your reactions, and to be able to watch them and modulate. Very simple way to start with that is I recommend a 60-second exercise. In fact, you can do it in less than that. Every morning, of just spending 60 seconds before you start your day, just observing your thoughts and emotions. It's a very, very old Zen technique, and it's very simple. You don't need to do it for hours. Obviously, if you want to reach nirvana, I guess you would have to. But all I'd like you to do is just spend a minute watching your emotions. The reason why this seems to work so well and has actually now become the basis of an entire new school of therapies, as you know, is that if you get into the habit of basically developing witness consciousness, being able to watch yourself, it's remarkable how quickly you can actually start noticing that you're not your emotions and you are not your thoughts. And instead of being buffeted by everything that comes through, you are able to quickly take control of the situation. You can de-stress this way, you can watch it happen, and you just begin to detach from the idea that I am my emotions. So I really very strongly recommend to everybody, just try the 60-second thing of watching. You'll find it's amazing. Chances are you'll get hooked and want to do it for more than a minute afterwards. So that's number one. Number two is to the key to resilience is coherence. And that's how we come full circle back to my purpose and meaning. If your world doesn't feel like it's manageable and meaningful and comprehensible, it's extremely difficult to cope. And there's a ton of very good data on this, that if you feel that your life is unmanageable, it's things don't make sense to you, it's extremely difficult to bounce back. And that was why we started with the purpose and the meaning piece. So coherence, that everything has some sense to it, that you're not stuck in some dreadful Kafka novel, that you actually are a participant. Because one of the things that is interesting, and I noticed on your website that you've picked up on this very important data about health, longevity, wellness, that a key to it is to actually be participating, that you're not isolated, and that you actually feel empowered and that you can make a difference in your world. Absolutely key. It's not just about healthcare, it's empowerment and feeling that you are involved. So this is absolutely a key piece to this. I don't know if you saw some very fascinating new data from UCLA about that when people are lonely and isolated, the inflammatory mediators surge in the blood, and people that feel better, and in fact, when people start making social connections, the inflammation starts coming down again. Very remarkable.
And it's starting to look like inflammation is a real big key to all of our health problems.
Oh, it is, without question. There's inflammation is involved in places that most people have absolutely no idea. And tell you, when I first started looking at this, about 20 years ago when I was writing one of those doctorates, I put in a long section about historical data on inflammation and vascular disease. And at the time that I was being examined for it, they didn't know whether they were going to fail me for being too out of left field or give me the gold medal. And it was now, of course, it's everybody's realizing even things like heart failure, arteriosclerosis are all inflammatory. So any kind of social engagement, making sense, having it will help you.
So let's get back to our third step in resilience.
Perspective. You must be able to see things from a positive position. And that's, you see how all these are linked together. You have the self-regulation piece you've been watching. You've also got this ability to make sense and have purpose. So perspective is absolutely key. Fourth is earned rewards. That's very interesting because, you know, for years people used to talk all about self-esteem and all that. The self-esteem literature is is actually a lot weaker than most people realize. And the most important thing about all of that is self-esteem that happens because you've succeeded. That's great. Mm-hmm. Just telling somebody they're wonderful, looking in the mirror every morning and telling yourself how great you are, doesn't cut it. So it's having earned rewards. Number five is purposeful physical activity. So actually doing things that are meaningful. I just dug a ditch. It's great. And the last two that, again, bring us back to where we started are hope. There's an enormous amount of very good evidence now on the association of hope and recovery from all kinds of illnesses and actually keeping well. And the last is having faith. And it doesn't necessarily mean to be religious faith, but having faith in yourself and in something. So the greater good. And again, that's that participation thing. So those are my main steps: self-regulation, coherence, perspective, and rewards, purposeful activity, hope and faith. Together, they can change your life in the most fantastic way.
I think one of the most remarkable things that has happened in psychology in the last 20 years is we would look at concepts like resilience or optimism or happiness, and everyone would say, yeah, we should have that, we want it, but be pretty clueless about how to achieve it. And now we have systems that people can use to achieve those.
And I think it's remarkable, isn't it, the way in which we had to get other cultures and that provided us with some of the clues for how to do this. And mm-hmm. when you think about it, people like the Tibetans, I mean, they were stuck in those high mountain places for 1,000 years. They were left alone, and all they did was think about how to control their minds. So probably worth listening to after 1,000 years of experience. And then, of course, the science started looking, and you mentioned Marty Seligman, and others have done all of this work, and now we realize that there's a huge amount that you can do for yourself and your family and the people around you very quickly. And it's amazing how many years, and when I was training, and maybe you as well, we didn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Because there wasn't any data on it.
No, but now there's a lot of extremely good stuff. This is not something that's just cozy or feel-good stuff. It's absolutely rock-solid data. And the other thing, and one of the reasons I became so involved with it, is building resilience using those very simple steps is also one of the keys to avoiding burnout. And I once suffered burnout. I missed it completely in myself. I was a meditation teacher, and I missed it. So now I'm evangelical about showing people how not to burn out.
How do you see depression fitting into integrated health?
That's a very big question in this sense. There are multiple contributors to depression. And again, I like to use my little model of physical, psychological, social, subtle, and spiritual. And the reason I do that is because undoubtedly there are some people who have a measurable biochemical disturbance which causes depression. And that may be the predominant feature in them. And those souls oftentimes need pharmacological help. There's not a whole lot else that works on its own. But pharmacological help is not the only thing. You can also certainly have things in your life which may cause depression because you're not that resilient or because something really terrible has happened. And there's also the social component. And there's a very interesting new idea that I'd like to share because it helps people greatly.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fundamental difference in the way that men and women tend to communicate and relate to each other. I'm not talking about something soft, the men are for Mars thing. I'm talking about some very interesting empirical data. From early puberty, and this is transcultural, this is not just learned behavior, we know that men tend to be very transactional. Women tend to be far more relational. So men, it's far more about the deal, what's the answer. Women tend to spend more time on the social aspects, relationships. One of the problems that arises is that during adolescence, girls tend to have much deeper relationships, and when they break, as they do all the time, because there's so much emotional valence in that, when they break, they get disappointed. And it's now believed that's one of the things that may actually set up women to getting depression later in life. why depression is more common in women. Useful to know that because it helps explain lots of very odd data from the 60s and 70s about the causes of depression. And why I use my whole model, I also regularly see people who are depressed because they feel a spiritual hole in their lives. There was a study recently suggested that 30 million Americans regard themselves as spiritual seekers, people that feel there's a spiritual hole. And that in itself can be a very potent cause of depression. That's why I like to sort of approach it from all of these different angles, and I find that is often a far more satisfactory way of giving people what they need.
I think that makes a lot of sense, that it's different people have different gaps that are causing the problem, and you need to concentrate on what's causing their problem or what their needs are rather than one size fits all.
Absolutely correct. And there's been a great deal of discussion recently because we're currently in the process of establishing the new diagnostic manual, which is due out in 2011. And one of the problems that's been coming up again and again is the way that people are trying to include normal human variation and make it pathology. Mm-hmm. You have to give it a drug. And, you know, it's okay sometimes to be shy. It doesn't mean you have social phobia and have to take a drug for it. It's okay to be depressed because your wife's died. You know, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And it's very important to contextualize and just to see exactly, you know, when is it a sickness, when is it a physical thing, when is it psychological, when is it okay? And all of those questions, because we are all different and the one size fits all does not work. And it ain't going to help to give everybody in the world Prozac. Somebody tried doing that. It was an entire town where everybody was given Prozac. And believe it or not, some people got very, very, very sick.
Mm-hmm. Sooner or later, we all have friends that develop cancer, and maybe we develop it ourselves. What do you say to a person who's just received a diagnosis of cancer, say colon cancer, and they're just feeling overwhelmed and don't know where to start and don't know whom to turn to?
I'm very happy to reveal that I went through this problem myself several years ago, and so I'm a survivor, and I think there's never one single way to talk to anybody about this when they've had a problem. That's why I'm always interested to know where is a person's center of gravity, what's important to them, because for one person, talking to a psychologist would be a good thing, for another, a priest. For another, they just really want the kindness and comfort of family members, because we're all different. Some people like sympathy. Others think that sympathy is the worst thing in the world and go away and don't bother me with it. So we're all very different in exactly what we like, how we respond, and what will work best for us. So I think the key point is it's individualized. Know where a person's center of gravity is. And again, as if I had one wish in the world, if I had my magic wand, I would like everybody in America in childhood to learn resilience, to learn the art of what's important for you, how to bounce back. And then it makes it much easier for the people around you to help you as well. So it's always, I think, it has to be individualized, because I know that when I was facing this kind of a problem, my approach was very proactive, and I wasn't about to sit around and feel sorry for myself. I was going to get over this, and 5 years later, I have. And how we actually approach that and how we always approach it is, again, from all the different perspectives. And it's just a slightly different way of thinking and a slightly different way of acting, and it really makes a huge difference.
So your approach is to start with questions about meaning and then also take a look at resilience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll give a very practical example about this, and a couple that I've dealt with very recently and somebody else in another part of the world that I'm due to see, is that whenever anybody has bad news of any sort, anything like this that is happening, is that you really need to find what is important to them. Is it they're frightened? Is it that they don't want to leave their kids? Because when you actually find the area that is important to mm-hmm. the superficial, I just don't like being ill. The real core features, it's amazing, because then you can very quickly give them advice that fits. So if it's, in my case, I had work to do. I had a message to bring out, and I realized it was time to stop just writing academic papers about it, but actually to take it to the world. And that, for me, it was very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
For somebody else, they would have a different motivator. It would be maybe they didn't want to leave their kids alone. Whatever it happens to be, individualize it. Find where that center of gravity is. Find your purpose and meaning, and build that resilience. And if you do those things, you are giving a gift that goes on giving, and it's more valuable than anything else in the world.
That makes perfect sense. What would you say are the most exciting developments in health and integration of health?
Oh, wow, there's so many of them, Mike. You know, this is an amazing statistic. It's now calculated the sum total of all medical knowledge is doubling every 3.5 years. In the area of the brain, it is doubling every 2 years.
Mm.
I find that just utterly stunning, that if we look at everything that was discovered in the history of the world up until the beginning of 2006, it's just doubled. And I think that's just amazing. I think the most interesting things that we have learned recently that are going to impact everybody in a very major way is the brain regenerates throughout life. We know that the richest source of stem cells is actually inside the brain. And the whole stem cell debate that's been very hard for many of us over the years is probably going to turn out to have been meaningless. The brain is full of the things. And we know that you continue creating new neurons, not many, but in key areas that are very key throughout life, certainly into your 70s. They're even midwife cells that direct the stem cells. That's a huge thing. Second is that the brain constantly recruits what it needs. It's one of the things that is different between us and most other mammalian species. When you're on a task, what happens, and why I always counsel people, don't say this bit of the brain does this and this bit does that. The brain simply recruits what it requires. That leads us into the other extraordinary thing, the plasticity of the brain. It's way beyond what most people realize. You're a psychologist, you know this field very, very, very well. Most people outside our field simply do not know what seismic changes are taking place in psychology and brain right now. And related to all of that is what I love saying is biology is not destiny. I think one of the most extraordinary things in our field has been the discovery that our genes, certainly the ones in the brain, do not determine our behavior. You know, we were all brought up from things like eye color and sweet peas, and you know, if mommy and daddy have blue eyes and little Johnny has brown eyes, mom has to explain to do it. That simple idea doesn't work in the brain. There it turns out that most of the genes are involved not in determining your behavior, but how you respond to the environment. And this constant interplay is, I think, a very remarkable thing, and it is also informing a lot of this integrated approach, that by doing, you know, the right medications, if that's what's needed, by doing the psychological material and so on, that all of those things together can have measurable physiological effects in the brain, the spine, in fact, probably all over the body. And I think that's a most incredible discovery. Biology is not destiny. They shape, but they do not determine where you're going.
So if you blink, you just missed more breakthrough research developments, and the developments are becoming more optimistic all the time about our ability to be resilient.
Absolutely, and if we have a real take-home message today, apart from the little thing on how to boost your energy, which is a little gift to everybody, is just realize that in the midst of all of the bad news that we keep hearing about, there is just this extraordinary maelstrom of new, very positive information, and we're even reconceptualizing things like how
things
work. I know we're pretty much out of time today, but it's very interesting field. So even you mentioned depression a few minutes ago. I'm going to leave you with that. It now appears that antidepressants don't anti anything. What they do is they help to build resilience.
I love ending on a positive note, and I love the way you pull so many things together and make it simple and a few steps and common sense that is not very common. This is America's anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricky, with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, one of those places for you to go to get the kind of information that Dr. Petty is talking about. Today's expert guest is integrative health physician, Dr. Richard G. Petty. His website is richardg.com. And his book that puts it all together is Healing, Meaning, and Purpose. Information on anti-psychology or anti-aging psychology in my free Defy Aging newsletter is at drbricky.com. That's drbricky.com. Or you can just go to notaging.com and it'll take you to drbricky.com.